Welcome, everyone, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host and fellow bow hunting friend, Phil the Iceman Mendoza.
What's up, Will?
Not much, Phil. Were you aware that this podcast is brought to you by Mountain Ops?
How could I not be aware, man? I mean...
I guess I know if you were.
you know, the guys out there at Mountain Ops... They see good things when they, I guess they saw good things, you know, so they wanted to be a part of the movement and the movement that we're driving, right?
I would totally agree. Do you know what my favorite part about Mountain Ops is?
What's that?
Their hats.
Yeah. Aaron was rocking the hat all weekend.
Was he really?
Up at 13,000, man. And it was just shining like a beacon, you know, that orange logo on his head.
Was he giving your position away to all the elk and mule deer out there?
No, it was, I think it's toned down enough to where, you know, I think it was out of their sight, but definitely we saw it.
I've kind of been hinting at Casey to send me one of their new, the camo, like snapback hats with the orange logo on the front. And he's like, oh man, we're all sold out, this and that. And then I see that he posts an Instagram, or his brother posts an Instagram picture, and guess what he's wearing?
A new hat?
That motherfucking hat. Tells you where I stand, doesn't it?
That's probably the very early prototype. That's why, Will. That's, you know.
Do you think that's personal, super special, man? Prototype?
I think that's probably what it was.
Yeah, I hope so.
So, well, hey, man, you know, I saw something on Facebook. You qualified for IBO Worlds.
Did you see that? You know what I saw on Facebook?
What'd you see?
That if you use the promo code NBH20 when you are checking out at the Mountain Ops website, you'll get 20% off your order.
Well, that would be fitting, so you can get your 20% off order, so you can go ahead and use that when you go to IBO Worlds, right? And then you can kill it.
If I'm not wearing one of those hats at IBO Worlds, something will be killed.
Casey and Jordan.
I'm not saying, but I'm
not saying, but you're saying, right?
I'm not saying. You're not going to get that recording. That's a verified threat if you do. Anyways, yeah, I did. I guess I'll throw this out to the audience. We do not have a guest for the episode. Phil and I decided that we've had a lot of great guests in a row, and we've got some booked coming up. But man, things have really been going quick and evolving rapidly. That we just kind of wanted to sit down and hang out, kind of talk to each other and bullshit a little bit. After this, actually, we're going to record another separate podcast that'll be, you know, phone in from you guys out there. Hopefully, you know, you guys phone in and that goes well, or else it'll be the same podcast as this. Just we'll break it up into two episodes. But anyways, going back to your question, yeah, I opened the mail today. I was like, oh man, maybe it's a bill and I forgot to pay the Deer Slayers Archery Club there at the IBO shoot, you know, and I opened it up and it's like, oh, an invitation to Worlds. And I was like, well, I shot pretty poor, so I must have got real lucky, or just shot well enough that everybody else shot poorly.
Whatever and it takes.
Yeah, you know, I I know Jared Price asked about IBO earlier in the year and about as far as what it would take to get to Worlds. And I'm going to tell you this, Jared, unless you know it's really close or really far, if you shoot everything from the open stake at 43 yards, you're going to be really damn close to that 10 spot. And it does not matter what the distance is. That 43 will keep you. You might cut low line, you might hit high line, but for, I bet you, 25 out of 30 targets at a general IBO open stake, you're going to cut that line. You're going to be in the 10. And you'll qualify for Worlds. You can come on out, open invite. You can stay with me. We'll drive on out to Ellicottville, where it is this year, which is, I think, like 3.5 or 4 hours from my house. So it's not bad, Western New York. And nice. We'll go to Worlds together.
That sounds like a plan. Although
did you qualify for Worlds, Phil?
I haven't shot a single IBO shoot. Only tournaments I've shot this year is a couple local shoots as well as the two train to hunts that I did. That's it this year.
Man, so I guess we both qualified for train to hunt nationals, but only one of us is qualified for IBO Worlds.
Hey, man, you got more stripes than I do. I'm not going to argue with you on that one. Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you there.
Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. I'm actually, it was one of my goals to qualify in the Open because, as you know, I shoot similar equipment to you. You know, fixed pin sight. I run the, what's the technical term of the Bee Stinger stabilizer setup?
As far as, I guess I'm not.
Is there a fancy name for that thing?
No, I mean.
It's the back bar, front bar.
You got a side bar.
It's like the Hunter something it's called, right? Nice.
Yeah, so the Hunter division is pretty much 12 inches of stabilizer at the front maximum. So 12 inches or less would be a hunting setup or the bow hunter setup.
Right. And so I could have done that, but you know what kept me out of being in the Hunter class?
The movable sight?
No, it's fixed pin. Fixed pin CV I'm running. It's got, I think I've got 5 pins on it.
Okay.
You want to know, can you guess? Can you guess what kept me out of, I had to go open?
No, what's that?
You should know this. You should know what kept me from being in the bow hunter class.
No, it wasn't your arrows, was it?
Why would it be the arrows, Phil?
Because I've not shot a lot of IBO, to be honest with you, but if you shoot a fat shaft, do you have to shoot the open class?
No, it has nothing to do with fat shaft. It has to do with, if you want to be in the hunter class, and I believe there may be one hunter class that will allow you to do this. I'm not 100% sure. But if you're in the open class, I was in the open class because glue in points.
I did not know that.
Yeah, which honestly, I didn't care anyway. If I'm going to shoot, I'm not going to go to a shoot where I know the farthest stake is going to be 40 or 35 yards. Give me the length all day long.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I didn't know. Like I said, most of what I did was ASA, and I guess I always shot glue in points at ASA for every division I shot in, so that wasn't a determination point as to what division.
Yeah, that's which I guess is kind of silly to me because it's not like you're shooting broadheads. You know, if it was like the broadhead division versus, you know, field point division, I could understand that. But glue-ins versus screw-ins, I mean, maybe you know a little bit more about this than I do that you could say, oh, here's why they do it, but I don't see the point.
You know, that's not the first thing that I've heard from the IBO, and I'm not here to take a shot at the IBO. Like I said, I've never shot a national level IBO shoot. I've shot some local stuff, but there's some rules that are a little bit maybe outdated.
Yeah, I would say that's an outdated one, but you know what I do like about the IBO?
What's that?
Speeds.
Yeah.
You know, you're allowed a lot more speed than you are in the ASA.
Well, that's still based on, I mean, you know, your taller, longer draw length shooters are at an advantage to the shorter draw length guys because they generate more speed. So for the taller guy, yeah, it's a great thing. For the shorter guy, that's where, you know, your shooter's in that 26.5 to 27-inch draw length range. You know, they're usually at a 25 to 35 feet per second disadvantage to somebody with 30-inch draw length.
You could say
all things being equal.
Yeah, but you could say the same about, say, ground to sand, like, train to hunt, right? There's the ground to sandbags. You could say, or ground to shoulder sandbag. You could say a shorter guy has an advantage because he has farther distance to go to cycle a ground to shoulder. You know, it's kind of like, hey, why don't we just everybody picks their equipment? Some bows are faster than others. You know, you can either shoot it or you can't.
Right.
And yeah, you know, some might keep you in, but if you're a guy like Levi Morgan, you know, if I'm 7 foot tall, that's not going to make me as good as Levi Morgan.
No.
He's going to bang out the 14s, and I'm going to be sit there holding my balls in my hand, you know, getting the snot beat out of me.
Yeah, so, you're right. I mean, from a certain perspective, there's a disadvantage to the shorter guy, but you're right. You've got it or you don't. I mean, we're talking a few feet per second that might result in a 2 to 4 point swing at the end of the tournament. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, and it's a maybe. It's a maybe. Yeah. And here's the thing about those tournaments is you can find a point here, a point there if the wind blows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of variables.
What's you've been shooting any tournaments this year? I don't even know what you've been doing other than training to hunt.
Yeah, no, Alex, I shot a couple of the local state level 3D shoots, and I shot everything with my train to hunt setup. I mean, usually when I'd shoot those, I shoot the pro class here locally, but I would be shooting a long stabilizer, movable sight. Every once in a while, I'd dabble with the lens and stuff, so I'd go full bore open setup. But this year, it was, like I said, short stabilizer, 12-inch. I had about a 10-inch offset bar, I think, off the back. I shot one tournament with the movable sight. I shot one tournament with my fixed pin. So I've been really in hunt mode since early this year. And I just, you know, I think it was a sign that I decided to go that direction to shoot the tournaments because I ended up drawing two. I mean, I drew a sheep tag. We've talked about that a couple times on the podcast, but I also drew a New Mexico elk tag in addition to my Colorado elk tag. So I've got some pretty decent tags this year.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I go to New Mexico September 15th. So 14th or 15th, I can't remember what day it is. But it's a 7-day season there, and it's a wilderness hunt there as well. So, man, my Kafaru gear is going to get put to work this year. I got a new bivy that I went with at the advice of Aaron Snyder. I usually hunt with a small one-man tent, and he's like, man, this is the way to go. Go bivy
and tarp. Bivy solo?
Bivy and tarp, you know, in case super you get tarp. That weather that rolls in. I'm going to go with a super tarp. And then actually for the sheep hunt, we're probably just going to take like a sheep, something a little bit even smaller, lighter weight, just because like when I was up there this last weekend, I was just in the bivy, you know, and we didn't get any rain, but just in case we end up getting some rain when we're up on that sheep hunt, we'll have that smaller tarp just to kind of help get a little bit more out of the weather.
Help. All right. Eastern hunter, right? We're going to have to break this down because I don't need to hunt out of a bivy because I have a house I can go to. However, yeah. I will hopefully be making it out to actually have a big goal of hunting the Adirondacks backcountry style this year, which, you know, we can get more into later. But so bivy, right? Does Kafaru make bivies?
No.
I didn't think so. Who's bivy you rocking?
I got a Rab Ridgemaster.
English company.
Not 100%, honestly. Like I said, I'd done some research and ended up going with that Rab. Like I said, that's it was, you know, it's a little different. I'm not claustrophobic, but there's not a lot of room in those bivvies. You know, if someone hasn't slept in one yet, this one has a hoop over the head, so you've got, if you actually got reined in and you need, you know, just hanging out reading a book or something, you've got room for that. Mm-hmm. But there's not much room for anything else.
If you were to go with your wife, what would you take?
I'd have to take a tent.
Two-person or three-person?
Probably a three-person tent. And
just
the reason,
that size?
Well, if someone's not used to spending time in a small, confined space, they're not going to do well. My wife's a little claustrophobic.
That's not
and true. No, and the, you know, the bivvies are all enclosed. The one I've got's even got a fly that if you zip it up, if it's real hot, you can just have like a screen, right? So there's you can get some air in there. But you, for the most part, it's just a really small tent. And what most people think of, you know, is, oh, if you got a tarp and you got a bivy and a sleeping bag, what about the bugs, you know? Or you know, my wife's first comment to me was, well, what about the animals? And I said, well,
if an elk gets real close and he's real big, we're going to shoot him. Other than that, don't worry.
Well, and more so like on bear and mountain lion, you know, I said, well, if a bear wants to get in my tent, I think he's just as easily going to get in my bivy. So, you know, it doesn't really matter bivy or tent in that, you know, in that respect. So for the sake of saving weight, saving space in your pack, you know, and like I said, we talked on that last podcast with the guys as we came back from the scouting trip. man, you know, the what you put in your pack matters. You start climbing up and down those hills, and it's not that it's anything so physically, you know, stressful that you can't do it. It's just that it's really hard to breathe at 12, 13,000 feet. And if you're having to muscle up an extra 5 or 10 pounds in your pack after, you know, a few days, you're probably going to be wishing you didn't bring stuff.
Wait, so you're going to tell me how hard it is to breathe at elevation?
Hey man, I tell you what, I think that what you experienced coming to Nationals last year, you can probably very easily relate that to me going up to 12, 13,000 feet. Because even though we're, you know, it's about the same transition.
It feels like, it does feel like there's a governor on your body though, doesn't it?
Yeah, and when we were hiking up, like I said, we weren't in a race. We just paced ourselves going up the hills and coming down, and we went at a good pace. We got up to where we wanted to go fairly quickly, but it's definitely a, you know, you had to take into account that you couldn't move as fast for as long as you're used to.
You're just doing a slow and steady trip to the pain cave.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know if I've talked about it on here, but I was talking to Kenton and some guys when we were out in Colorado, and I said the hardest physical competition thing I've ever gone through was last year's Nationals meat pack, where it just felt like my body was giving up on me. And there was a lot of times where I just wanted to put it all down and walk out and feel like, oh man, I'll just say it's the elevation because it's crushing me. But I didn't, and I finished it. And I felt like after that point, I really knew that no matter what I was going to do physically in a competition or challenge or hunting or anything, that I was the type of person who was going to see it through to the end.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's it. That, you know, when people talk about mental toughness and something that breaks someone in an event, you know, there's challenges that you know, that was one of them, I would say, for many people, because like you said, having that much weight on your back, not being able to breathe. I mean, you got your chest strap on your pack that you're probably trying to take as deep of a breath as you could, and you probably couldn't, you know.
No, and that was even before I knew how to wear a pack properly.
So that's where, you know, if all those things mounted up, yeah, it's enough to break somebody's spirit. And I don't want to say that that's what, you know, made Kenton knock the weight down for this year for the qualifiers. I think it was because that was the most intimidating part of the competition. And he of course, wants to appeal to the masses and bring more people in. But like we talked before about, you know, we carry 200. And then, you know, at Nationals 150 for a little bit longer course. Those are some stripes that, you know, I don't know if he'll get back up to 150 for Nationals, maybe, you know, but if he doesn't, you know, we're part of that initial crowd, that elite crowd that had to do that 150 and 200 pounds.
You make a really good point, because I know neither of us are going to Nationals this year. And I'll hands down tell you, I would rather go in place like dead last and see everybody I got to meet last year or say this year throughout all the challenges, than go and win it and not to get to see a single one of them.
As far as the people, you mean?
Yeah, I'm saying I'd rather go and place dead last and get, you know, see Luke and Gabe and everybody at Nationals than go and win and say none of them were there. You know, say they were home crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that
I'm going to miss them not going to Nationals a lot, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I agree, man. And that's where, you know, honestly, you know, I had a talk with Braden because we were up on the mountain and you know, Aaron and Braden and I kind of separated. We were just more looking for sheep. And, you know, Aaron just kind of looks over to Braden and says, are you going to come with us opening weekend? And he said, I'm planning on being here. And, you know, I didn't want him to feel pressured into it. So I talked to him when we were just alone, him and I, and I said, hey, man, you know, I appreciate you coming to help me up here, but I understand that's nationals also, and, you know, if you got to do your thing there, I mean, I'm not going to be upset about it, you know. Even for him to come up and help scout, I was happy about it. And he told me, he's like, you know what, I plan on being here to help you out, you know. So that, having him up there, you know, when we go up on the hunt, and Aaron, it's the camaraderie and having your buddies with you to do that kind of event is I think the similar what you're talking to about going to those kind of events and hanging out with the crowd that we hung out with, because it's just a great crowd. I mean, everybody's great people there.
Yeah. You know, and I think you would be hard pressed to find somebody from that group of dudes or ladies that we've met, you know, that we've become friends with, who honestly wouldn't be like, you know what, Phil, I will skip nationals and go, you know, hunt goat with you, you know, hunt, or the sheep with you. And that speaks to, I think, two things. And one is the character of the people who are at the competitions.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they're just selfless, nice, positive people. Honestly, I don't know, other than maybe the CrossFit box I work out at, I don't know if I've ever met that amount, you know, that so many just high caliber, high quality people in one place. And the other thing I think it speaks to is there's no other sport where, you know, in football, if the returning quarterback from the previous year's Super Bowl winner was in the Super Bowl again the next year, and he was like, oh, sorry, guys, I got to go hunting, no one's going to understand that. He's going to get torn apart. No one will understand that. But in Train to Hunt, you know, everybody's like, yeah, you do have to go. You know what I mean? You're not going to find that anywhere else.
No, and it's, like I said, I mean, I'm gonna miss the crowd out there and you know, competing in that kind of event, because, like I said, I've heard, you know, you hear the naysayers, if you will, right? Oh, you know, you guys are, I've heard it from
heard any naysayers, so you're gonna have to film me. I'll be honest, and I'll tell this to everybody out there. If you're not gonna keep it positive, if you're not going to bring something to the table, if you're not going to produce, if you're not going to include, if you're not going to come in and say, we're here to support, to push, to move things forward, whatever it is, stay the fuck away. Find something else. This isn't the podcast for you. I'm not going to speak for Ken, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say this probably is not the sport for you. In fact, you may want to leave hunting and bow hunting altogether. Go pick up something else, or just go home and play with yourself, because we don't fucking want you.
Well, and that's the thing, man. You know, we, like you said, we're here to support each other, to support bow hunting and fitness and everything else. So to hear the guys that are, oh, you guys aren't all that, or you guys aren't hunters, or you're not, you know, it's to me, it's just like, well, we all have the same opportunity to come out here and play the game. If you don't want to take that opportunity, you don't have to. But if you're going to sit here and call out people that are doing it and say that they're not real hunters or they're not real, you know, athletes, then, you know, I guess all we can do is compete with the people that come out and compete, right? And let the chips fall where they may. And the people that want to be naysayers, like you said, just, you know,
find a new sport.
That's it. You
won't
know.
We're taking this one over.
You won't know what this community is about until you come in and join it. But you know, it's just that, man. Like I said, I'm planning on playing again next year. You know.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think I might go to Arizona next year to qualify.
You know, if it wasn't for
that, thinking about it,
hiking in that damn sand, I think I might go back to Arizona.
Hiking in the sand.
Man, I tell you what, Will,
hiking
when we
in
went
sand?
when we were doing the meat pack,
I don't want to hear it.
And it was sand, man. It was, you know,
you go
over the little hills, and Well, that's it. See, my perception when we went out to Arizona, it was like, man, no elevation.
Flat.
They can't have hills like we have mountains. So I was thinking, man, it's gonna be a cakewalk. You know, this meat pack is just gonna be a stroll in the park. And you know, they set up the course on these, you know, set up on the range, a 3D range or field range, whatever it was there, and really nice place, but. The low spots, the drainages where it's literally sand, you got 100 pounds on your back and you want to move faster in the sand, you just dig in deeper. You're not going any faster.
Let me ask you this then. How did Gabe Krell move so fast?
Gabe is light on his feet and Gabe's nimble. you know what? I don't think it matters with Gabe how much weight he has on. He's got one speed and he gets to his high gear quick and he just moves. So let's leave Gabe out of it because
I'm bringing Gabe into this because I was actually talking about Gabe yesterday.
On a properly marked course, Gabe would have probably killed us in Arizona by at least a couple minutes.
I'm not going to sit here and bullshit you.
I had
all you guys to the halfway mark because we could see you about halfway, and Gabe was like at least a minute, maybe a minute and a half ahead of you guys.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question.
And then he never showed up. And all of a sudden somebody goes, hey, there's somebody out there in the middle of the cactus.
Yeah.
Fucking
yeah,
Gabe.
No, man. And that's where, I don't know, like I said, it was a different – I think that was as difficult for me as any of the Colorado – maybe not Nationals, but any of the Colorado qualifier or Casper last year as far as the meat pack. I think it was equally as difficult just because – it was different terrain. It was different circumstances.
Yeah, I can see that. And I know you don't want to talk about Gabe, but I'm going to bring him back up because this is – I might just have to become a sport analysis. Ah, crap, we lost Phil. Hold on. So we got separated due to a connection loss on my end there, but I was talking about Gabe and how – it seems that he always has, you know, from my observations, maybe one rough event at each qualifier that kind of torpedoes him a little bit. And I think once he starts bringing them all up onto the level that, you know, I know he can pull off, he's going to be a real threat for that, you know, those top podium finishes.
Oh, yeah. He's, you know, there's. So, you know, like Luke is another one, for example. And those two guys, they're best friends, but they battled, right? Luke and Gabe both hear about trained to hunt, or they see it in a magazine, an ad or something, like a week or two before last year.
Let me ask you this. Who even looks at magazine things and goes and does them? Who does that?
I don't know, but – That's the story he told me is that he had found out about it like a week or two before. They decided, hey, we got to do this. And they didn't really start preparing for, you know, the events until, you know, halfway through after Fort Collins, because they realized, hey, you know, we got to get our butt in gear for this stuff. And look at them now, you know, Gabe finishes third in Arizona. Luke finishes third in Colorado. And, you know, either one of those two guys could have been higher on the podium if it wasn't, like you said, for one or two small circumstances. I mean, Luke finished first in the challenge course in Colorado, and because of, I think, Josh and Braden just shot a little bit better than him there, they ended up coming in front of him to finish on the podium ahead of him. But, man, it was so tight that those guys are real contenders, you know.
You know, it's funny. I got a text message from Luke the other day saying him and Gabe were going to go team until they heard Matt and I weren't going to be going teams to Nationals.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. All this time I've been building up teams. I felt kind of like a dick because I couldn't follow through with it all the way to the end. But it's funny how they were considering it. Now they're like, nah, fuck that. we're going back to individual. I do, and I still think this, even though I won't be there at Nationals, is teams are going to be heating up and stepping up.
Yeah.
Up here. So we talked a little bit before about this. We were talking about sites before we started the podcast. Let me ask you this. In your mind, in Phil Mendoza's world, what do you envision the perfect site being for this competition, this, and, you know, that you can use not only in the competition, but also out in the field? Because I know you're taking pieces from other sites and putting them together. What do you envision the perfect site being?
Well, you know, so here's the deal. I like certain components of each manufacturer's stuff, right? When it comes down to the pins, for example, I'm not a fan of the CBE pins because
why is that?
To me they're not as durable. Just like an Excel Armortec site, in my opinion, the Excel Armortec has the best micro adjust individual pin setup on the market. Right? It's precise. It's like a target sight.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as you drop that, if you're climbing up a hill and you slip and that bow goes sight down into the ground, you just trashed your pins.
Which is gonna.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with the CBE. The CBE pins are more of a finesse or more of a aesthetically pleasing, right? They look real nice. They're really fine looking pins, real crisp. They're not going to hold up to a beating.
Well, here's the thing, Phil. I have a CBE. And yes. I have bent my 40-yard pin.
Yep.
Do you know what you do?
Bend it back?
Yeah, you just carry needle-nose pliers with you.
Yeah, but that – so here's the
you're
deal,
good
right?
To go. Fixable.
Let's say that you've got a four- or a five-pin driver-style sight or slider sight. And let's say that, you know, you obviously your bottom pin you're using as your slider pin. And let's say you bend that bottom pin and you try to straighten it back out. Now let's say the scenario comes about where you're taking a shot on a 60, 70, 80-yard animal with a pin that's bent that could result in anywhere from 3 to 6 inches off impact at 60 yards if you don't bend it perfect. What's it going to magnify out to when you're shooting out to 70 or 80 yards?
I agree with you there. I totally agree with you there. My thing is that circumstance has happened to me once in the, you know, maybe hundreds. I could be bordering on thousands of shots with it now. I've been running it since the winter cam. I ran it at the winter cam, having installed it the day before. And what I really like about those CBE pins is the crisp, clear, you know, window of view, whereas I had a black gold that I'm pretty sure, you know what I went through with that as far as having to get a whole new wind. It's just, I think I bent it. I think what I ended up doing is bending the dovetail somehow. And the what I like better over maybe the black gold head is the black gold head, as you know, with their pins are built like, you know, unbelievably well built, but it kind of muddies that housing a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and that's where, again, I guess, you know, 4-pin or 5-pin on a slider. I like the sight that I custom ordered from Black Old for this year. I still like a bigger pin for my top pin, you know, 20 yards. Because, honestly, if you're going to get something in a low light situation, be it whitetail hunting or elk or deer hunting, legal light, mind you. I'm not anybody shoot. You know, here in Colorado, we can't use a light, right? And
yeah.
So if I have a little bit bigger fiber, if it's, you know, something within 20, 30 yards of, you know, of legal light, but let's say it's foggy or it's real dark out, like a rainy situation.
Let's say in the hour before sunset kind of rule.
Well, yeah, but I think officially it's half an hour before sunrise. And half an hour after sunset is what Colorado's official shooting light is.
I think we're somewhere close to that.
So that being said, let's say it's rainy, it's foggy outside, it's technically legal shooting hours, but it's really dark outside. You're in dark tunnels
with
canopies. Exactly. That bigger fiber if you're in close quarters like that, I like that bigger fiber because I can gauge that 20-yard pin from 20 all the way out to 40 if I needed to. And it's big enough where I can see it. Once you start talking about the next pins down, now you're talking about extending your range a little bit and shooting out further. So I like a 10,000 pin. I don't like any more than 5 pins. I'm on the borderline between 4 or 5 pins for the same reason. Too many pins. I used to hunt with a 7-pin sight. And I tell you what, man, that throws you for a loop when you got a 57-yard shot.
And all of a sudden you start counting.
Oh, man. You know, and that's the last thing you want to have to do when that moment comes about. That, you know, you need to think quick and make a good ethical shot. But to me, again, 4 to 5 pin, bottom, at least bottom 2 pins, if not the bottom 3 pins on a 10,000, durability is, you know, to me is more important than just about anything else, because when you're hiking all day or you're hiking for the majority of the day, if something can happen, it probably will happen along the way.
All right, to that point, I saw a video. Copper John ran over sites with trucks.
Yeah.
Their site did not break.
Yeah, so I heard about that one. I know Spot Hog has had similar videos, or people have done similar videos. There's some well-built sites out there. You know, I don't know. I guess to me it's there's a lot of good sites.
Well, what's your perfect
site?
That's my question. Have you yet to find a perfect site?
No.
Okay, what do you envision the perfect site being?
I can't tell you, man. I might try to make some money off that. No, I'm not going to get into that into the
it's
business.
It's got lasers.
Yeah.
Shoots the arrow itself.
No, I mean, you know, of course you want lightweight, you want durability, you want crisp pins, you want – I like the black gold, that photochromatic cover, because it regulates
nice,
pin light. Yeah. So I like a lot of – there's more qualities in a black gold so far than – any other one, to where I lean that direction because of that. So, but as far as a perfect site, there's companies not far off, man. Like I said, it's just a matter of I'm picky, and the CBE and the Excel or the ArmorTech, those ones I think are more cutting edge, if you will. Mm-hmm. Not great tournament sites.
They make great tournament sites.
Too. Exactly. Not saying anything bad about Copper John or Spot Hog or anybody else. Spot Hog, their new Fast Eddie is a really nice site.
Yeah.
So everybody's got really good stuff out there. I think that, again, if the Spot Hog made a 3-pin head that was that adjust easier than what their multiple pin head.
I do like the drive adjustments on my black gold more than probably any other, you know, adjustable pin sight I found.
Yeah, and that's where I'm not I bounce around, and I've shot, you know, 3 different sights this year because I still
you want to bow shop. That makes it a little easier.
It does and it, but like I said, I don't know. At this point, there's a lot of good sights that I'm really happy hunting with on my bow right now, but I just think a little bit more tweaking with some of the other sights, and it can go any direction, man. You know, any one of those big companies out there, if they tweak their – but here's the deal. You're talking about a guy that hunts in the West, which does not – the population of bow hunters does not favor – marketing change or dramatic, you know, innovative changes, because the money is not driven out west. It's driven more by the hunters out east.
Yeah, but, you know, great site's a great site.
Right.
And here's my thing, and I couldn't be as in-depth or specific with what would need to actually physically be done to change these sites and engineer them to make them better. But it comes down to these fundamentals, as I see it, is the site has to be target quality, accuracy, deadliness, with the ability to then drive it over with a Sherman tank.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's hard to do and keep a site under $300, right? I mean,
it can't be. It's not going to be. It's going to have to be $350, $400. And you know what? Guys who buy a $1,200, you know, Hoyt carbon bow, guess what? It's $400 isn't that bad, and guess which one's going to hold a higher retail value the next year?
Yeah,
I'm sure you can attest to that.
Yeah, and it's, but it's fun to see, you know. I mean, that's why part of going to the ATA is fun, just because, you know, we get to see some of the new designs that get released there, and you get to talk to the manufacturers and you know,
that
whether
trophy
they listen
taker
to you or
was
not.
Neat.
That was cool. I just, again, a price
tag. Price
tag
was,
oh man.
400 I could do. $650, I can't do that, unfortunately.
No, the only thing that I didn't care for on that site is you were still limited to the adjustment within your housing, as opposed to some of the other driver sites where you can move your housing.
Yeah, like an HHA or a the Black Gold.
Exactly.
Mine's a custom from Black Gold too. It's got, I think, 6 pins, and it's got the wheel knob on it, and the wind just, you know, everything's. Black Gold does make fantastic sites, but you know, it comes back to, if you really want to test a product, you get to train to hunt, because someone's gonna fuck it up.
No, and that's right. And like I said, you know, Spot Hog, Black Gold, you know, we used to sell a lot of Copper John when I first opened my shop, and then we hadn't done as much. It's again, your standard 3 or 5 pin sight that we sell a lot of. I think they kind of, I don't know if they ended up changing ownership back then.
I think there was something there. I heard there's like some sort of fluctuation in quality, and they're on the rise again. I can't speak to it officially. You know, Chuck Cooley's the man to talk to on that. So I'm sure you know.
Yeah, I actually, I'm going to be having Chuck on the Championship Bowhunting podcast again next week, and we're going to talk more on target tournament sites.
You know what else Chuck's big into?
What's that?
Mountain ops.
Chuck is big into mountain ops.
He's lost a shit ton of weight. He wrote a really – did you read his article where he went to the doctor and did the whole study and everything?
No.
Yeah, Chuck I don't know how much weight he's down, but I think a lot. I think part of it was he might have stopped putting shit in his mouth. I don't mean literally shit in his mouth. I mean he started eating a little less crap. He was making shakes and you know, doing the protein and sticking with all that, taking the focus stuff, and just kind of buying into that whole, you know, little bits of improvement. And he ended up writing a really great. I think he's technically a blogger, or whatever. Speaking about, you know, the transformation he's gone under, and it's funny how, you know, I'm sure you see this with people, once they start making little changes and adaptations, they can make pretty substantial differences in their physicality.
Oh yeah, you got to chip away, man, and pretty soon, after a period of time, you know, definitely big changes are possible. And you know, speaking of mountain ops, they just did their drop zone giveaway. I don't know if you saw that on Facebook. I saw that on I was actually just checking that out when we were having some technical difficulties. The guy's name does is
I don't know if
right
say
now.
It. I want it. No, I'm just kidding. But it's a great giveaway. Did you see their new thing they're announcing with the Mexican wrestler?
No.
Those guys, man, I'm telling you. Their ads, their hats, their supplements are great, but you know, I'm a hat guy. I love hats. That's what I'm going to talk about. And, Phil, if you use the coupon code NBH20, you can get 20% off your next Mountain Ops purchase.
Yes, and actually, you know, if you would be, you know, so inclined as to try out some Mountain Ops if you haven't already, or, you know, if you're already a believer in that product, enter the promo code, you know, that throws us a bone. The promo code that you just talked about, Will, we need to put it in bright, bold letters. The Natural Born Hunter, right? Not M, NBH.
Yeah, NBH.
That's right. So,
NB. I can't do this. I'm not sure. NBH 20. And you will get 20% off your next Mountain House purchase.
Yeah, no, again, you know, the guys at Mountain Ops have a lot of stuff they're working on. They're out at the Northwest?
That's a full draw film tour right now.
Yeah, but they're
Oh, you're talking about the bird.
Well, yeah, it used to be the bird, right? It used to be
I think you said the bird again. The
they're
called
at,
like Northwest. It's the what is it called now? I think they're like a main sponsor or something of it used to be Bowcast at the bird. I do not remember what it's called now, unfortunately. Is it this weekend? Is it coming up?
No, I don't know if it's this weekend or not, man. Well, I'm really bad on dates, but I did see that they are driving out to that, I believe. I don't know if it was Casey or Jordan posted something on
right
social
now?
Media.
No, they're right now they're going to the Full Draw Film Tour. That's where
that's
I saw the picture of Casey.
Right. So, yeah, it's the Prime Total Archery Challenge that is fueled by Mountain Ops. And, yeah, so it's the Total Archery Challenge, not the Northwestern. It's the Total Archery Challenge.
Totally Archery Challenge.
Yeah, so...
But it used
check
to
them
be
out.
The podcast at the Bird, I think, was what it used to be called. And I think it's going to be back at Snowbird again, which is a huge ski resort for those of you who are not aware. Huge archery 3D shoot. I've heard it's an amazing time. I'd like to make it to it. And actually, just I'm not even doing this because they're advertising with us. But actually, when is that, Phil? When is that shoot?
Let's see if I can check that out here on there. You know what? It does. I see the main banner on their page right now. Well, I'm gonna have to look for it. So give me a few seconds here, and I'll find
Phil,
it.
Phil, you take all the seconds you want. I'll talk a little bit about myself because I am getting married this weekend.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
And who's the lucky lady?
Lady is Melanie Biss, the only woman to be able to put up with me for such an extended period of time. You know how they say people get cold feet.
Yeah.
Right? I've got hot feet.
You got hot
feet. Yeah, I'm ready to get this going. Lock it down. Make it official. and you know, this is where I kind of feel like I didn't pay attention enough or care enough or put enough forethought into this. And it really wasn't until I got my gray train to hunt shorts, which if any of you guys get out there at the challenges, Kenton's selling the 511 with the Train to Hunt logo on them. I'm going to tell you right now, those gray ones, man, phenomenal shorts. You
really?
Cannot rip the crotch on those babies, and I've ripped the crotch out of a lot of shorts in the workouts. Those things, they got like a separate crotch panel. You got to check them out. Like, it's a U-shaped crotch panel sewn in there. Like, stretches, it's fantastic.
I've got them. I've got a pair.
You got a pair of those? You know,
I'm not of the train to home. Yeah. The I've got the
511.
The drawstring. That's what I used this year at the both train and events was the 511 shorts.
Fantastic shorts.
Oh yeah.
And I ended up getting one of those. You see the have you seen the wedding rings? They're the silicone ones. Like the company's name is QALO. I don't know how you even pronounce that. But
yeah, I've seen them.
So I ordered a black one, right? Because I'm like, I don't really feel right wearing a ring. There's something about, like, I can wear a watch, and I can wear this like, silicone band here. But I can't really wear any other jewelry and feel comfortable. So I figured, all right, I'll get one nice wooden ring, okay? And I'll get that, and it'll be my going-out ring, my going-out wedding ring. So I got it, ordered it from this company on Etsy. It's a cherry wooden ring. Fits a little tight. I'm like, listen, babe, this is a little tight. I'm only going to wear it like two times. And then I'm putting it up on a thing, and I'm wearing the silicone ring rest of the time. I got black, and I'm looking. I'm like, man, my hands are so pale. I should have gone with slate gray. So what I think I'm going to do is reorder the slate gray. Which I know, you thought there'd be a huge punchline there, but that's what I got. I'm excited. I can't wait to be going around wearing a wedding ring, looking at my hand with it. But I cannot be looking down at this black wedding ring with my pasty, twinky-looking fingers, you know, and having to stand out that much. I think I'm going to have to go gray, because after looking at the gray shorts, I'm thinking with my pasty legs and my pasty hands, gray is more my color.
Well, you know, that's a great observation, Will. But
yeah.
I'm more interested to know in where you're going for your honeymoon.
I'm going to Brazil, just outside of beautiful Rio de Janeiro. I don't know how you say that.
So, are you guys going to you're going to a resort or just a hotel or what?
Timeshare. My family's got a few timeshares, so we're using one that was our wedding present for my parents. We're going down, staying in timeshare outside of Rio. Gonna go in, you know, hopefully see the what's this Christ statue called? I forget the name of it. I knew it earlier. But, you know, I'm talking about the famous Christ statue on top of the mountain.
Yeah, the one on Fast and the Furious, man.
Yes! So we're gonna do everything for Fast and the Furious. Except for driving a very slow economy car everywhere.
That's alright.
Yeah, so that's
cool, man.
Plan.
Yeah, Brazil. Never been there.
No, neither have I. I actually have always wanted to go to Patagonia and do a little hunting and such down in that area. But since I couldn't convince her to do a hunting trip for the honeymoon, she said any trip after that we could do hunting, but we're not doing it for the honeymoon. That's what we're doing. I think it's Copacabana is the famous beach down there. I'm gonna do that. I'll do some nude sunbathing on the non-nude beaches. See how long that lasts. I'm actually looking forward to dropping into a CrossFit box where nobody speaks English, that, or hopefully somebody does. I mean, you can pick up on what they're doing, I figure.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, that's a pretty big endeavor here in Mr. Will Bradley's life, and we are looking forward to calling both of you by the Bradley name.
You know what? I'm really looking forward to that too, to be honest with you.
So that's cool, man. I mean, I'm happy for you guys in Brazil, and then, man, I mean, we've got a loaded next couple months, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, we got some big guests coming on. We've got the guys from Montana Wild. We'll be on in a couple weeks, or I think when I get back, I think Aubrey Marcus, the CEO of Onnit.com, will be on at some point. We're working, I know, with a few of the top professional target shooters in the archery world.
Yes, we're actively pursuing them.
Yeah, you know, and I actually really enjoyed this. I think we'll have at least one more of these somewhere in the mix before summer breaks. And, you know, we're going to have to catch up again with you and Aaron and Brady, maybe do like a more official version than you guys riding around the track.
Yeah, no, that was kind of difficult on the audio a little bit, but yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah,
real quick, while I've got it up, let me plug Mountain Ops one more time with their Total Archery Challenge, and that Salt Lake City, it's the Salt Lake City, or the Bird, the Bowcast, used to be Bowcast at the Bird, right?
What's it called now?
It's Total Archery Challenge, there's what they're calling it, at the Bird, July 17th through the 19th. And what I'm looking at here, actually next year they're going to Pennsylvania with that Total Archery Challenge.
Are they?
Seven Springs Mountain Resort.
What's that? You want to fly out and go to that with me? Sure, Phil. I'll pick you up.
You know what, man? I would love to come out to one of these events. And if we get anybody out there at Prime or Mountain Ops or anybody else that wants to show us the way,
I'll pick you all up at the airport.
There you go. that would be killer, man. I'd love to get out to one of these events. A couple of buddies of mine went down to one of the Bowcast ones here a couple of years ago, and they had a great time. But anyway, getting back to upcoming guests and what we've got going on, we've got some interesting guests. We'll definitely have to catch up on a catch-up podcast again, whether it's right before or after, you know, into hunting season. Our hunting season out west here starts a little bit before yours will, so it'd be, you know, we'll work that out.
We have a long-ass season.
Yeah, and, oh, man, I don't know. I mean, you know, we definitely want to
You know what? Why don't some people, if anybody out there listening to this has some ideas of guests they'd like us to have on or try to get on that you want to hear from, send it to the Facebook page. Write us, man. We're always open to some different people. Maybe you can turn us on to some guys or ladies shaking things up we don't know about. We're always happy to try new things.
Yes, I second that. Let's get some interaction and, you know, let's just keep rolling with we're having fun doing the podcast. I think we've had, like you said, we had some great guests on. We have some great guests coming on. So, man, let's keep rolling with it. But so what do you think, Will? You want to wrap this one up?
Yeah, we're going to wrap this up. This will be the week ending on like the 19th, I think it is, somewhere in there. Post it probably tomorrow. And we're going to actually go ahead and record the one we'll release the week after this that will be while I'm on my honeymoon, which is the open forum. We got some exciting different people coming on, just shooting the shit and talking about some stuff.
Before we go, Will, what was that promo code again?
That promo code, Phil, was NBH20. you can get 20% off your Mountain Ops purchase by using it at checkout.
So let's go ahead and close with that. Check out Mountain Ops.
Here's the thing. We don't want to sound like we're whoring ourselves out to it, but they are our only advertiser currently, and they have believed in us very early on. And I really just really appreciate Casey and Jordan just having some faith in us and being able to, you know, help us with this. So it means a lot to us, and it would mean a lot to us if you gave them a shot. So thank you to Mountain Ops, and thank you to you all for listening. This has been the Natural Born Hunter podcast. Wake up, chase your dreams, repeat.